And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com. On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, we are joined by an old friend making his third or fourth or fifth appearance. I can't keep track anymore, but it's John Gassaway, who covers college basketball for ESPN Insider and his own website. Of course, we always love bringing John on and getting his perspective about the Hoosiers, about the Big Ten Conference as well. And we ask him about both, and he has a lot of interesting insight into what Indiana fans can expect in Archie Miller's first season and what the Big Ten will look like coming up this season. So all of that and more on this episode of Podcast on the Brink with John Gassaway coming up next. Hey, real quick, a word about this week's sponsor, SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events, because with SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There really is nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have SeatGeek on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way that I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and like I just mentioned, with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats to anything that I want to go to. I actually used SeatGeek to buy tickets earlier this year to see Yogi play here in Dallas. I bought my wife concert tickets for the summer. So SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. Now, here's how to get an even better deal, which is Podcast on the Brink listeners get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K today, and you'll get $20 back from SeatGeek. That's promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K. And now, on with this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink. We're joined on this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink by one of our favorite guests, John Gassaway, who analyzes college hoops for ESPN Insider and at johngassaway.com. John, it's always great to have you on Podcast on the Brink.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
For sure. So as we were just talking before we hit record, you know, this is obviously the off season and a little bit of a dead time, so we all get a chance to kind of relax and step away a little bit. But I know that you keep your eyes open and, you know, follow the draft and still do some analysis in the off season. Is there anything, as you've kind of looked back at last season and as you, you know, just kind of think forward toward next year, that has particularly stood out or that you found particularly interesting?
You know, it was a strange year for the Big Ten last season. We don't usually see that big of a contingent of NCAA tournament teams that, A, does not involve Indiana, B, didn't have any high seeds. You know, the highest seed that the Big Ten had was a four, and that's highly unusual. And then C, of course, the elephant in the room, it had Northwestern. So it was a weird season all the way around. And it's tough to see any of those things repeating, except for the large contingent part and the Northwestern part. But we'll get a little bit into the Indiana part, I'm sure. But I would expect a higher seed. In particular, from one team that we'll probably be talking about, and we'll see if any of those assumptions check out. But a very strange season in 2017 for the Big Ten.
And obviously, as we look forward, one of the big storylines for next season is coaching changes, as it often is. There were three in the Big Ten, with Archie Miller taking over at Indiana and Brad Underwood at Illinois, Chris Holtmann at Ohio State. When you sit down and start doing your projections for next year and start looking ahead to next season, how do you project teams that are going to have new coaches? Because, I mean, obviously some of the players are similar, but, you know, there's usually some roster turnover. There's obviously differences in style of play. So, for example, you know, with Indiana specifically, how do you try and project what Archie did at Dayton to what he'll be doing at Indiana, and specifically with this roster that has otherwise been, you know, under different leadership than it will be this year?
Right. I mean, the short answer to that question is it's very difficult to project, because the easy thing to say is that it's not going to, the new coach shouldn't really make a huge difference just in the first season. We always expect that they will. But for instance, if you look at Miller's first year at Dayton, it was very much in line with what you would expect if you were just keeping things coach blind. We know that Miller is a fantastic defensive coach. He was not able to, you know, bring that impact to bear in the first season at Dayton. And that's, you know, that's no skin off of his reputational nose at all. I mean, that's normal. But then at the other end of the spectrum, you know, you're speaking of new coaches in the Big Ten, and we saw the day and night transformation that Brad Underwood was able to make in year one at Oklahoma State, at least on offense, maybe a bad day and night transformation on defense at the same time. But, you know, that might have been the best offense in the country. And who saw that coming before the season? No one, with good reason. So, you know, you've got this little asterisk of expectation out there. I certainly don't think Brad Underwood's going to do that on offense at year one at Illinois. But if you saw a kind of defense that Miller was consistently getting out of Dayton in late era Miller, you know, who knows what could be possible in year one on defense for Indiana. The Laptops do not expect any great progress in the first season, but the saying still applies. You never know.
John, you talked about, you know, the first year you can't always project a big jump in, you know, for a team based on a new coach. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, it's not the players that particular coach wanted to bring in for a system. He's inheriting a new team. Are there specific areas, and I'm thinking Indiana fans are probably going to be looking at turnovers, obviously, and defense. Are there specific areas that you feel are easier to make big improvements in year over year, or is it just in general it's tough to make big leaps just based on kind of the roster has been set by the previous coach and the new coach doesn't have a lot of control over it?
Yes, you nailed it. I mean, in the abstract, I can picture Indiana fans wincing as I say this. In the abstract, you know, turnovers is much easier to correct than something like, you know, bad perimeter shooting. The coach can't get out there and knock those shots down for his team, but you should be able to cut down on turnovers. And more specifically, you should be able to cut down on a turnover rate that was as flagrantly large as Indiana's was in Big Ten play last season. But there is a Lucy in the football aspect here. I mean, we've spoken of turnovers over the past few seasons more than once on this podcast. So it is a recurring issue. In theory, Miller should be able to do the same kind of look at this that we all do and say, okay, the problem was here, and if we just do this, then we will stop turning the ball over. And there you go. We know, of course, that Indiana still had a good offense, even with all the turnovers. A lot of that is with good shooting. So in the ideal, the shooting would stay the same, the turnovers would be cut down, and there's your good offense in year one, even with players that you did not inherit. But it's not as simple as that. The easy prediction is that Indiana will commit fewer turnovers. It would be hard to duplicate. And I'm not saying this in a pejorative sense necessarily. I'm just saying purely statistically, they were almost 4 percentage points, 3.5 actually, above the Big Ten average. So, I mean, just sheer numerical gravity says that that's going to come down to earth. Turnovers will be down. And the real question is, what happens to the offense as a whole? And personnel turnover, which we will get into here, is a big part of that. It's not the same team that we saw on the floor last year committing turnovers and making shots by any means. And Miller will have to fashion from these players what he can.
We all like to reference the, you know, Pomeroy's four factors on kind of on both sides of the ball. But of the four offensive factors, do you view turnovers as the most coach or coaching style or playing style driven?
Well, more broadly, shot volume. Yeah. And Archie Miller in particular has blown hot and cold during his time at Dayton on where he stands on offensive rebounds. When he's got a shorter rotation, he likes to impose severe restrictions on offensive rebounds because he feels legitimately that defense is really, really important. He's asking a lot of these guys, which he certainly is on defense. And I've actually spoken in person to him on this very subject a couple of years ago. And the words that he used at that time was, you know, I can't ask these guys then to turn around and try and crash the offensive glass. We have a bit of a gentleman's, agree to disagree on the subject. I look at a team like SMU last year, which had even a shorter rotation, and they were beasts on the offensive glass. And anybody who has been along on the ride with me for the last couple of years knows that I think that a coach has a big influence on the volume of shots that his offense takes, whereas whether those shots go in is more of a roll of the dice with, you know, certain caveats applying to good shot selection, of course. And, you know, offensive rebounding, not that every team is going to be North Carolina by any means, you're not going to do that. But if you can just be average on the offensive glass, take really good care of the ball, then you're going to have a really high floor for your offense. So yes, in answer to your question, that is within the coach's purview in terms of things that he can control, whereas where the shots go in or whether the other team commits turnovers or whether the other team's shots go in, that's a bit more due to kismet or karma or luck or whatever you want to call it.
You'll have to excuse me, John. My mind is still reeling from this notion that turnovers could actually improve. I'm trying to process this.
I know. It's a long shot, but it just might work. Yeah.
So, you know, concerning Indiana next year and the guys that are still on the roster, you know, I think, you know, the most notable names, guys like Robert Johnson, Deron Davis, Juwan Morgan, I think everybody expects that Indiana will have to lean on those guys heavily. Among those guys or even someone else on the roster, is there anybody in particular that you think is particularly well suited to, you know, playing in Archie's system, or on the flip side, a guy that may not quite fit, that may struggle more than others trying to fit into what Archie wants to do?
Yeah, I'm not going to point the finger of doom at anybody just yet. I'll leave the book open. I do know that you need to earn your chops on defense, obviously, and that doesn't mean that every player is going to be a shutdown defender, but every player does need to exert themselves on that side of the ball. And, you know, Miller did some amazing things last year that, you know, we don't see from every team, particularly with respect to a defender like Kyle Davis, where minimal things were asked of him in terms of particularly shooting the ball on offense. State of Indiana fans think back to what we saw under Brad Stevenson Butler from a guy named Ronald Norred, you know, that kind of a defender where your job is to blow up the game on defense and then take good care of the ball on offense. I will be interested. We don't generally see that much in the Big Ten. I'll be interested to see if Miller can bring that back. I've always thought that's kind of an interesting perspective, and that could be tried. You know, you've got a quote unquote featured scorer on offense. Why not have that kind of exaggerated role of one player on defense? I don't know if he'll bring that to bear at IU, but speaking on offense, yeah, the players you named, absolutely. You know, for a team with as much turnover from the featured players as we've seen, and some familiar standbys who have gone on to the next level, when you're talking about guys like, you know, Johnson and Morgan, Newkirk, these are experienced players. These are not freshmen or sophomores by any means. And particular with Johnson, you know, somebody who also had a considerable workload on offense. So we say that Miller didn't inherit these players. That's true. We say that Miller has had a lot of turnover since last season. That's true. But within those bounds, I can think of two other first-year coaches in the Big Ten who would not look askance at these cards that Archie Miller has been dealt. There is some talent and, importantly, some experience here.
Yeah, and you know, particularly with a guy like Daron Davis, how do you try and project him forward in a situation like this? I mean, obviously it's a new coach, but it's also a new role. I mean, he had actually the highest usage rate on the team last year at 24%, but it was only in 33.9% of the available minutes because, you know, his conditioning wasn't what it needed to be. He also committed a lot of fouls per 40 minutes, committed 7 fouls per 40 minutes. But, you know, had some moments where he looked really, really good, especially for a freshman, you know, with his footwork and with some of his ability down low. And we know that he's going to be a featured player this year and that Archie's expecting a lot from him. How do you project, based on what you saw from him as a freshman, to what he'll be able to do now as a sophomore?
Well, typically to use the cliched term, the upside for a foul-prone freshman who really crashes the glass and did have a relatively high usage rate is very, very significant. You would expect big things from such a player as a sophomore. Now, that usage rate that you referenced, that's for being the highest on the team, it's still pretty low. I mean, the story behind the story there is that no one had a particularly high usage rate. And again, that redounded, you know, in a turnover normal environment, that would have been a really good, a great offense with a lot of equal participants. 24% really isn't that high. But you know, the offensive rebound rate that you saw in limited minutes from Davis, if he can replicate that and boost that 2-point shooting, cut way down on the fouls and then stay on the floor. And I mean way down on the fouls. that is what you want. I mean, that is a player who at 6'10 can be exactly what you need. You need basically three roles in any offense. You need the ball handler, the wing, and the big. And Daron Davis can be that big if he just stays on the floor, definitely.
John, I wanted to ask you about the Big Ten at large, kind of the pecking order of the conference. And, you know, one of the things I like to do in the offseason, because there's not a lot to do, is kind of after the NBA draft settles and we kind of know what each team's going to have next year, is just kind of make some power rankings in the offseason. I put Indiana 8th, and I got a little blowback from Indiana fans that I wasn't higher. And then I read a couple of different newspaper guys, I think one from Michigan, and I'm not sure where the other one was, that had Indiana, I think one had them 12th and the other 11th. And I'm curious kind of where you see Indiana stacking up next year in the Big Ten with what we know right now. I realize things can change. It's July, different, you know, and it's really impossible every year. There's always a team that surprises. Like last year, Minnesota was a team that I don't think a lot of people had finishing in the top part of the league. So I'm curious just overall where you think a fair place to look at Indiana and the pecking order as you evaluate things here in July.
Yeah, I got to say 11th or 12th feels low. You know, and I would be more in your neighborhood, not to ingratiate myself with agreement. But I mean, the shorthand on the Big Ten in terms of preseason expectations, I think everyone can agree, is that Michigan State should be the favorite. And then after that, I see a big knot of teams in a good way. I mean, all tournament worthy, much like we saw last year, with the difference being there was no we expect Michigan State to be a top 10 team this year, and there was no such team from the Big Ten last year. So there was a bunch of tournament worthy teams, and I think that will again be the case with the difference being, obviously Tom Izzo has a lot coming back, and he's added a top 10 national recruit. So usually you would expect to see that team be really good. I see Indiana being a part of that knot of teams, maybe on the low end of that tournament worthy knot, but I would think something more in the area of 6th or 7th rather than 11th or 12th. And we're talking about photo finishes here. There's a lot of teams right with Indiana in terms of preseason expectations. We will race up the learning curve in November and December, as we always do. We'll know instantly, this freshman is ready. This other freshman over here is not. This impact transfer was overrated. And these preseason expectations will all be solidified or scuttled, as the case may be. But 11th or 12th, that seems unduly bearish for the Hoosiers in the preseason from my chair.
John, we haven't had a chance yet to look at the schedule for next season, but as soon as we do, everybody will go and look at who, what teams everybody's playing twice, who teams just get once, who they have to go on the road at, just once. And that's been an increasing storyline as the Big Ten has continued to expand and the schedule has gotten more unbalanced. How much of a difference does it make when it comes to the end of year standings, who the schedule, who teams actually play? Because it's not, no one ever wants to, kind of blame something on the schedule because it's something no one really has control over. But I think it makes a difference, doesn't it?
It makes a difference in who wins the regular season title. And in theory, that should be a big deal. Statistically, because, obviously you can win the conference championship by one game. And if you played that game at home against Rutgers instead of on the road against Michigan State, then obviously home and road are balanced, but your schedules are not. So absolutely, in that sense, it is either or, and it makes a huge difference. In terms of people who go to KenPom and look at the rankings, the difference tends to be overstated. If you're playing 18 games against 13 other teams and they are balanced, 9 home and 9 road, it really doesn't make as much a difference statistically as people think. And then lastly, as Indiana fans know all too well from two seasons ago, the final piece in this puzzle is that even though it makes a difference in who wins the regular season Big Ten championship, winning the Big Ten regular season championship in the final analysis doesn't matter because you can go 15-3, you can win it outright, and then you get a 5 seed from the NCAA committee. So these things get quickly forgotten, and then you say, what? We got a 5? We are 15-3. that is outrageous, in one of the best conferences in the country. So this is what we've been dealt in terms of we're going to have conferences that have, 14 or even more teams. We choose not to play round robin schedules. I love the conferences, analytically speaking. I love the conferences that do play round robins. I feel like, okay, I've got you, exactly nailed when I get those 18 games. I know really well, how good those teams are going in the NCAA tournament. And then, so of course surprises still happen. It just tells me exactly how surprised I should be. But I think that we tend to overrate the difference that unbalanced scheduling can make. Again, speaking purely analytically and not in terms of banners, we can still get a pretty good grasp on how good a team you are if you play about 1,200 possessions equally divided between home and road, even if your schedule isn't identical to somebody else's.
Speaking of scheduling, John, as someone I know that follows the Big Ten closely, I'm curious what your reaction is to the Big Ten playing a couple of games in early December and moving the Big Ten tournament up a week. In the grand scheme of things, do you think it has a chance to have an impact on the league's success in the tournament, or is it really not going to matter in the end?
Well, I'm biased in a couple of directions. I don't like conference games to be, separated. I do like them to be all together. And, you know, I mean, I'm fine with mid conference season events, of course, like, you know, if you get a chance at a game against Kentucky or the Big 12 has a challenge with another conference, you know, and that gets put in the middle. I mean, I'm not too much of a purist that way, that, you know, if you can do it, go for it. But the business of, you know, some of having a conference game like around late November, that always, it's a pain for me bookkeeping wise as somebody who tracks every possession, but I guess I can deal with it. I'm biased in the opposite direction because I do think it's going to be cool that the Big Ten tournament will be played in New York. I don't think it has to happen every year, but I think in general, college basketball and the NCAA in particular is a little too set in its grooves. And I think experimentation can be a good thing. And if it doesn't work out, you know, so be it. But we will have found out that it doesn't work out. So I do think it's a good thing to see what happens and to get into to Manhattan and play the event there and have it in the big city. I think it might be pretty cool. And then lastly, in terms of the gap between then, because the tournament will be quote unquote a week early, earlier than it usually is, and the NCAA tournament, I mean, that will be huge at the time it happens. College basketball coaches are the most small C conservative humans on the planet. They don't like change of any kind, and they will bellow and holler and complain every which way when it's happening. And then a Big Ten team, a good one, will lose early in the tournament, and it will be in the NCAA tournament, and it will be said that it was because of this layoff. I'm just not sure I buy that. Of, you know, teams like Wichita State play the same schedule as the Big Ten is about to play. They take a week off before the NCAA tournament, and they tend to do okay. Gonzaga, it's not exactly apples to apples. They actually wrap it up on about Tuesday in the West Coast tournament. So a little less of a layoff, but they did make the national championship game. I think that you can fare well. You know, actually, there's a growing body of research that says rest is really good and really important. So maybe it's all in all a good thing. But the anecdotal evidence, when you send, you know, six or seven or even eight teams, somebody's going to be upset in the early rounds, and it will be said it was because of the layoff. We'll have to play a couple of these to see if that's really the case.
John, you know, one of the most fun parts of any college basketball season is watching how players develop. You know, so a guy like Miles Bridges, who obviously has superstar potential, how does he develop from his freshman to his sophomore year? And then also, you know, a guy like OG Anunoby 2 years ago, who kind of came out of nowhere to play a big role on a championship team. What players, what individual players in the Big Ten are you most excited to watch and see how they develop this year?
Yeah, Miles Bridges is a good place to start because you know, I think that too often we speak of NBA potential as synonymous with college impact. And we who watch the Big Ten can cite any number of examples where they were not necessarily the same thing. Nobody is disputing the NBA that I know of, the NBA potential of Miles Bridges. I'd love to be his agent. Sign me up. He's got a great professional career ahead of him. But, you know, there's a limited, assuming he does go pro in 2018, which he should. He would be insane if he didn't. There's a very limited number of games in front of him in his college career. You know, what will he be able to do during those games? He showed all kinds of promise as a freshman for a team that, you know, was unusually average in Tom Izzo terms on offense. He was able to make shots from both sides of the arc while carrying a big load. So, I mean, he could really be something special to watch as a sophomore and on a really, really good team. So that obviously has spectating value, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. Conversely, speaking of possible Big Ten Player of the Year candidates who aren't Miles Bridges, what about a guy like Ethan Happ? You know, he's played his entire career, which granted it's only been two seasons, but with the same familiar cast of veterans at Wisconsin who traced their lineage back to the final 4 years. And now all those guys, you know, Hayes and Koenig, they're all gone. And, you know, one would expect Hap has to be the man. Can he do that? I mean, he's been incredible. I wouldn't say in a supporting role. I mean, he was still kind of the guy on offense, but I mean, he had a lot of help from his teammates. And what can he do now that you know, he's the junior and all of those seniors have left? Can he still be as incredibly efficient as he was around the basket? You know, is it still possible for a big man in this day and age to dominate with you know, zero range on the perimeter, or does he go the Nigel Hayes route and suddenly develop that range where he had shown none earlier? He's shown none over 2 years with Hayes. It was over his freshman year only. I don't know the answer to those questions, so I'll be really watching big established Big Ten stars like Miles Bridges and Ethan Happ with a great level of interest.
John, last question before we get you out of here. I mentioned earlier Minnesota being a team last year that kind of maybe snuck up on people, surprised. Is there another Big Ten team this year that you look at that has potential to make a significant jump up in the standings or be a tournament team that maybe wasn't a tournament team last year?
You know, Minnesota was a genuine surprise. That it was not a case where, you know, the smart analytic types, quote unquote, were looking at the numbers and saying, yeah, you know, Minnesota is really undervalued. That was a genuine surprise. And I am not seeing anything where I say, boy, people are undervaluing Team X. So I will say that any surprise next year will be a real surprise, like Minnesota was. You know, Indiana was a close miss of the tournament, just in terms of how good they were on offense. They weren't close in terms of one loss record. You know, you've got a team like Northwestern that should have been closer. You know, wasn't really all that different than Indiana in per possession terms. And then, of course, Minnesota, their surprise was that they made a great leap forward, but they weren't necessarily a juggernaut on either side of the ball statistically. So it's the illusion of how bad you were before, and then you become respectable, that makes you the surprise team that Minnesota was. The teams that I'll be watching with interest are teams that were pretty good last year and lost a lot of talent, teams like Maryland, and I'll be looking to see what they can bring to us. But the only surprises will be genuine, because as you look at the Big Ten from last year, there's nobody that's being undervalued. It will be a real dark horse. And if a team like, for example, Illinois gets better, then you will say, wow, Brad Underwood, a wizard, he does it again. It's not a case where he's got a lot of sneaky good factors that the eyeball are missing, that would be a genuine surprise.
Well, John, we always appreciate your time. We will let you get back to your off-season relaxation, and IU fans everywhere will go back to dreaming about a future in a much more turnover normal environment, to use your phrase, which I loved from earlier, which hopefully we'll get to see here moving forward from IU.
You absolutely will. Regression to the mean is your friend, and in 2018, teams do not turn the ball over 22% of the time in conference play. That's just going to be knocked down, and happier times are ahead in terms of turnovers. So good for you, Hoosier fans.
Excellent. Well, thank you, John. We always appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We'll be back next week with another brand new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers.